You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with us. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you were listening to us record live on Discord, you would hear that apparently I have dementia, and I have forgotten a lot of things because I misspelled the name of this episode in the show outline. But most of you aren't here in Discord, so you never get to hear that because we didn't record it, and we won't release it. So basically what I'm saying is join the Discord channel. I'm just plugging early in the episode because I got nothing else to talk about because it's all Corona all the time and I'm fucking sick of it. So why don't I bring in our co-hosts? Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Going outside is so overrated. I mean, I don't know why we went outside in the first place. I feel like I'm just going to keep doing this quarantining thing well after coronavirus is over. I get so much done.
You're the fucker who hates nature to begin with.
I know. It just leads me to wonder why I ever went outside in the first place.
When's the last time you went outside?
To be fair, I did go outside today, but I haven't gone more than a half mile from my home in 19 days now.
Okay, so I have a question for you. I have a question for you about this going outside thing. Do you feel different when you go outside and then come back in, or do you feel the same if you just stay inside all day and never go outside?
What I feel inside mostly, and I'm being a tiny bit facetious, well, only a tiny bit, I'm more productive than ever, but also I realize I have not enough to do in my life. The main thing I feel inside is boredom, eventually. But I don't think that has anything to do with outside. And when I go outside, I'm just not bored in that moment, and then I come back inside and I am bored. So,
okay, I disagree with you that it has nothing to do with outside, but we'll get into that at the beginning of Life on the Midside, which is our only segment this week.
Well, I'm so just saying, if I spent the amount of time I spent inside outside, I would start to feel bored outside, and then I would come inside and not feel bored, and then go back outside and feel bored again.
I agree with you. That's my argument. I agree with you. I agree with that assessment, and I think there's an important psychological idea for human life there, but let's table that and we'll get to it in the main part of the show because we have to introduce somebody else first.
What?
Joining us this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his gay white male privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, Justin, we've told you multiple times you have dementia. You just don't remember.
Well done. I appreciate the execution on that joke, and it's probably true. I don't know what it is. I do forget shit, though. I really do. And it's not just the podcast amnesia. Like Daniel says he has podcast amnesia. I have full conversations with people, and they're like, don't you remember talking about this? And I'm like, no.
And William, my degree from FU says you are 100% correct.
Right. Exactly. Good drop.
So I'll never let you forget that one.
It was... Yeah, when I turned like early 30s, like 32, 33, I started forgetting words and it's been all downhill from there. But then I can just fucking like, I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that play. Like I'll watch Three Games to Glory. They have them all on YouTube now and I'll be watching those. And I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that play and I remember that player. And he had this many catches in this year. And I'm like, why do I remember this? But I can't remember vocabulary words.
I picture Justin in his future retirement home at like 110, just talking to some wheelchair-bound person next to him about the number of catches Brady had.
Had? Has? Yeah, as he'll still be playing?
No, Brady's never going to play. This is going to go through the NFL season. The NFL season is going to be canceled, and Brady's just going to go, you know what, fuck it. I'm just going to retire, and that's going to be the end of it. Brady will never play another snap in another uniform. Oh, this is called the denial stage, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, the number of catches he has is like 2, isn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah. I think it, yeah, two.
In the final game in the regular season at Foxborough Stadium against the Miami Dolphins. I was there for that one. And then he had like one more in the playoffs. And then he had the one he dropped against the Eagles in the Super Bowl, which is the same play that Nick Foll caught the touchdown on and they called the Philly special. Makes no sense.
Well, when you catch one and the other one's dropped, history books write themselves.
Do they, though?
Do they write themselves? Literally, they do not. But you know what does write itself? Life on the Midside.
Sort of, yeah, but let's go into it anyway. William, hit the music. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope that you're making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. Already plugged Discord. Let's plug Patreon right now. If you, and we know it's tough out there right now, but if you want to support the show, you can do so on our Patreon. Just go to themidside.com/Patreon or patreon.com/themidside, and you can give us however much you want an episode or nothing at all. This show will always be free no matter what. So even as things turn into this economic decline, we will still be free and we will still be coming out every week as long as, you know, we don't have to, like, work extra hard to survive. And we'll get into that in a second as far as making extra money and everything. But the first thing I want to talk about is that I ran a poll on Twitter. And this poll has to do with my current living situation. So I moved to a new apartment, and it's a non-smoking apartment complex. But here's the thing. I keep the balcony open, the door to the balcony open all day, because I don't want to pay for air conditioning because I'm cheap and I'm trapped inside all day. I actually, this is an interesting question for both of you before we go into my poll. I make an effort to keep the lights off all day because I know I'm not here all day normally, so I know what my normal power bill is. So if I keep the lights on, my normal power bill is going to be in the rearview mirror because I'm going to be paying a lot more.
What do you guys do the same thing? Do you have? You do realize, like, modern fluorescent LED lights, it's like tenths of a penny an hour.
In any place I've ever lived, so now I got to question what else I'm doing, but in any place I've ever lived, if I have a week off from work, my power bill for that month, the electrical bill, is a lot higher than any other month.
All right. Well, it's
Justin exclusively uses vintage Edison bulbs.
Yeah. It's the AC. Then after that, it's your electronics. And then after that, I don't know. Your vibrator?
So
I don't know. What else you got?
So it's my television all day, you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So now I'm going to have to not watch TV all day. Thanks, guys. You just ruined quarantine for me.
More money.
Well, again, we'll get into that. Okay, so the other thing about my my apartment complex here is it's a non-smoking apartment complex. But the issue is, you know, keeping the balcony open because I'm cheap and that's my way of air conditioning. I can smell 2 to 3 times a day marijuana.
Dun, dun, dun.
So,
in Florida? They have that in Florida? I thought that was just in California.
Just meth.
Yeah. It's meth-flavored marijuana.
Hmm.
My first question for you guys is, before we get into the poll here, is I don't understand what possesses somebody who lives in a non-smoking apartment to smoke marijuana, or more precisely, why somebody who smoking weed is that important to them would choose to live in a non-smoking apartment. Can you guys explain that to me?
Well, I might say that it's increasingly difficult to find a apartment that will allow you to smoke outright.
Yeah, I think that's almost impossible. It's like trying to find an apartment in California that allows regular-sized dogs.
So you're saying there are no apartment complexes that are... Or, sorry, let me scratch that, reverse it. All apartment complexes are non-smoking. That's what
yes.
you're saying.
Yes.
Pretty much. And it's not all, but it's the vast majority. And certainly the nice ones are all non-smoking. And, people increasingly smoke cigarettes, but still a pretty sizable percentage of the population smokes weed. So those things are almost certainly going to be in conflict at some point.
And I can tell you, even this happens even in high-rise apartments. My friend lives in a 9-story high-rise apartment in Long Beach, and in their bathroom, they can smell the upstairs neighbors smoking weed, but there's nothing they can do about it because they have their medical excuse or whatever. So there's nothing the building can do, and they share a wet wall, not to get all architecture on you, so that's why they're able to smell it. But yeah, the one bathroom, you just go in and I'm like, oh, they just started smoking weed.
Yeah, that's the other side of it, Justin, is the whole medical marijuana thing. And if the person who's doing it has a prescription, nothing your building can do about it either.
Okay, well, that raises interesting implications for the poll. And it raises
the poll, Justin.
Yeah, it raises the poll. And it also raises other interesting questions that I will raise after the poll that I have this. So I asked in the poll, I said, if you lived in a non-smoking apartment and could smell marijuana multiple times a day but didn't know where it was coming from, what would you do? Would you ask all your neighbors, call management, yell from the balcony, or ignore it? Now, I was surprised at 24% of the 41 votes. I was surprised I got 41 votes, by the way. Wow.
People are bored.
People are bored that they pay attention to me on Twitter now. 24% said ignore it, and 49% said call management. Now, I'm not going to lie, I called management. Because for me, I don't know who it is. I don't want to start knocking on people's doors, asking what's going on. I'm assuming the people who are doing that are going to be confrontational with me. So I call management.
Why? They're high. They should be nice and chill and mellow.
Fair point. I would be confrontational, I guess. I mean, and for me, and this is the other interesting implication as to what you guys are saying, to me, it's a high value to live where I don't have to smell that. One, because I'm straight edge. Two, because the smell makes me nauseous, legitimately. It makes me sick to my stomach. I'm not making that up. It's not psychosomatic. I smell it, and my stomach starts to get upset. I don't like the smell of it. So my question then is, if all of these are non-smoking because of, you know, political correctness, how do we make it so someone like me doesn't have to put up with this? And did I do the right thing calling management? And what would you all do in this situation?
Well, you can only fight medical certificates with medical certificates. So you should get a medical certificate saying that you're allergic to marijuana smoke. And then they'd have to move your neighbor, you or your neighbor.
That's the only
I was
going to
say that, you fight it by grilling up some kielbasa every time you smell it out the window.
Ooh, some really bad Korean food.
Just start doing Korean barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah, or eating what's that? That's that horrible fruit that smells like a dead person. Oh. Come on, it's famous. Okay, just stare at me blankly. It's a good pod.
If only there was this device you could use to search for it.
The durian. This is Wikipedia. If you've smelled a durian probably remember it. Even with the husk intact, the notorious
in Zelda
Asian fruit has such a potent stench that it's banned on Singapore mass transit. Turpentine onions garnished with a gym sock is how someone described it. So get some of those, Justin.
Sorry, the reason I wasn't responding and I was just staring at you blankly is I live on the top floor and my closet, which I'm recording inside of for the acoustics, is next to the hall. But I hear noises, like I hear people's voices and I hear like scraping coming from like the outside or like above me, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on, because if there's social distancing going on, are people dragging dead bodies through the hallway?
We've gone from dementia to full-on psychosis all in the span of 17 minutes.
I'm not gonna lie, for about 10 seconds I got really paranoid and I was like, did they hear me complaining about the marijuana and now they're coming to get me
through the wall?
They're drilling through the wall.
Are you high right now?
Are you in a Doctor Who episode?
I think we're all in a Doctor Who episode. Which actually goes to the next topic I wanted to talk about here. And your point about the smells is well taken, but I guess you're kind of deflecting because you didn't want to answer. So before I move on,
no, my answer is what can you do? That's my answer. Yeah, especially if no matter where you live, the percentage of people who smoke marijuana is going to be high enough that unless it's a single family home where you are away from other human beings, you're probably going to have to deal with this.
And this chances is why I want to buy a house.
Well, yeah. And then, yes, you but if you buy a condo, for instance, still high percent chance you'll have to deal with this unless it's a single family home that's detached from other human beings.
No, the housing market is going to collapse, and I'm going to be able to buy a house really cheap really soon.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You don't need a house. You need a compound.
Yes.
Like Pangelet out in Vegas?
Yeah.
There's really
sex dungeon
nothing
and all
to do. If it makes you nauseated when you start to smell it, you'll just have to go inside, and that sucks, but...
I smell it inside because my balcony is next to my TV room, so I'm sitting there watching TV, and the smell comes in.
Fan? I don't know.
I have a hard time with this because why do I have to have less of a life because these people want to do something pathetic?
It's their choice, and they don't see it as pathetic, and I'm not going to say it's necessarily pathetic.
The real thing is what I said, right? It's not about me being glib and saying it's pathetic. It's the real thing is, why don't I have the option of living in a place
get
where a I want to? Right.
You do.
Well, that's the long-term plan, which is why during this whole thing, I saw an opportunity and I was like, wait, everyone else is going to be too afraid to go outside and too afraid to drive. So I signed up to drive Uber Eats. I wasn't necessarily going to talk about this on the show. But Daniel was like, hey, you should talk about that on the show. So I was like, hey, I should talk about that on the show. So I started
and
on
now,
Tuesday
hey, you're
night.
Talking about it on the show.
Yeah, now I'm talking about it on the show. So I start on Tuesday night. I've driven Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. We're recording this on a Sunday. You guys hear it all on a Monday behind the curtain. And I've made about $310, and I drive 4 hours a night. So it's just basically a part-time job. Now that's pre-taxes. So that's before the federal government takes their Social Security double out, you know, which is the 15% and then whatever the income tax is. So it won't be that exactly, but it'll still be pretty decent money, and it's still extra money I wouldn't be making otherwise. It's helped me tremendously psychologically, I would say, because referring to what Daniel was talking about pre-show, it's not about the boredom staying inside. For me, I've always had a strong sense of freedom when I drive around. I think I talked about this when I drove across the country and I did those two episodes where I drove across the country. I should have recorded while I was driving across the country. Why did I think of that? No, just when I discussed it. The ability to get behind the wheel and nobody bothers you and you can go where you want as long as you can afford it and your car doesn't break down. It's a reminder to me of the way things are, even though the way things may seem. Now, I will say this. There are a lot more police cars driving around, although I think in my area it's not as bad because I live so close to Disney, and I've noticed because a couple times I've had to cut through Walt Disney World. Because for those of you in California who have never been to Disney World or have only seen Disneyland, Disneyland is just like two parks in the middle of a city. Disney World is literally they bought a whole bunch of land, and there's a lot of empty space in that land, but then the parks are within there, and there's a lot of roads. So it's literally a resort. It's not just two parks. And wherever there are roads going into Disney World, there are signs being like, entering Disney World, so you can tell when you are. I've had to cut through that a couple times because it's the easiest way to get back to where I was. But what I've noticed when I've driven through there is that's where all the cops are. So even though there's nobody driving there, there's like a buttload of cops there, but they're not really as much on the main roads. So it's not gotten to the point yet that they're stopping you and asking you what they're doing, although I'm interested to see if that ever happens, because I'm interested to see if they're ever going to say Uber Eats is non-essential, because with the way people are, and they don't like to go out, and you know a lot of people don't like to cook, and they didn't do shopping, how can you shut down something like Uber Eats? I'm interested to see that, but it's just been affirming for me, and it's helped me kind of get out of the feeling of hopelessness this has all brought on, because I felt an immense sense of powerlessness, where
my life is being dictated by forces outside of my control in a way that it never has before. And this kind of helped me feel like I'm getting that back, where it's like, oh, yeah, you're going to say all this? Well, I can still go out and find a way to make money that most people would never do. And that's the other thing about it as well. I'm not going to bullshit. I wear gloves because if I'm picking up stuff that people are making and bringing it to other people's houses and everything, I'm going to wear those gloves just to be safe, because even I don't want to get it on the bag that people are going to be taking their food out of. So I'm not going to be somebody who's spreading those germs around. But I'm not... I don't have any fear about catching whatever's going around. It doesn't bother me. Even if I were statistically, if I were to get it, statistically, it would be unlikely it would harm me in a major way. And that was something I was thinking about the other day, is if there was somebody delivering food to you right now, wouldn't you want it to be me? Someone who looks young and healthy versus like somebody else where you're like, why is this 80-year-old guy driving Uber Eats giving me stuff?
Young and you, healthy, only mild dementia. Yeah, I mean, yeah. In Florida, that's really high standard.
That is a very high standard, right? Exactly. So that's sort of my little preamble on everything. I don't know if there's anything you guys wanted to ask about or comment on it or anything.
Have you had much interaction with people other than the restaurant people?
Yeah, the restaurant people are the most, and it's been interesting to see who wears gloves and who doesn't. There are some restaurant workers still not wearing gloves, which I'm sort of like, you work in a restaurant anyway. Now, some of them are front of the house people, but with the people who I'm going to their houses, most of them just say, leave it at the door, which is nice. A few people have come to the door and accepted it, but I haven't really had interactions with most people, which is a good thing about it as well, because it helps me maintain social distancing, which lowers my exposure as well. So I wouldn't say I've had a lot of exposure in that way.
If you had to average out your clientele, who is your average client?
I don't know. Maybe it's just the area I'm in, but I would say the average clientele I've had is middle class, either just before having a family or they do have a family. I would say that's the average clientele so far, which may be surprising, but I don't think it is. And in that sense, what's been most surprising to me is that even though people are on a lockdown and they're inside all the time, Friday and Saturday night were still the busiest night, and I made more money on those days. I was surprised that people are still keeping to that rhythm, even though it would be like important to order out any day of the week to sort of have a nice meal. I was interested that they still did it on Friday and Saturday night.
And finally, what are people ordering during the apocalypse?
The same stuff they order normally. I mean, it can range anywhere from, I've picked up McDonald's for people, Chick-fil-A for people, to, this is the weirdest thing, okay? The weirdest thing is, fucking from 15 miles away, 20 miles away, they'll order a place. They'll be like, oh, okay, I want to get that sushi place. And I'm assuming maybe it's a place they would regularly go to. And they're like, oh, well, I can't go there anymore. Well, I might as well Uber Eats it. So that's the interesting thing to me. Or like a Latin cafe or something. That one's pretty popular. Well, they'll order it from 15, 20 miles away. But it's the same type of food.
But not any particular entree.
No, I'm not seeing anything particularly standing out there. Like I said, there are a couple of restaurants, the Sofrito Latin Cafe. I'm going to end up going there eventually because so many people are fucking ordering from it. I'm assuming it's good. I actually looked up on Yelp. I was like, how many stars does this have? And it's got 4.5 stars for over 1,000 ratings. And I'm like, shit, what the fuck is this place? Why is no one talking about this place ever? But no, there's not a particular entree or anything. It's all the same sort of stuff you would expect people to order. One guy, and this is the order that took the longest, one guy ordered 10 wings from Hooters.
Just 10 wings?
Just 10 wings, and it took me half an hour to get it. I got there, and Hooters made me wait half an hour for it. An interesting thing about Hooters is Hooters girls are still working there. So they're the
cooks.
Where
did you expect them to go? OnlyFans?
No, well, yes, but no, they probably all have OnlyFans as it is, and when you go to their table now, they not only write their name down on the napkin, they write their OnlyFans address down.
No, that was, thank you, Daniel, for laughing. That was a better joke than William gave me credit for. No, I expected it just to be the cooks and the managers. I would expect them not to want to pay them because they would be losing money as a company for paying them. But I guess it's a way to keep them employed and show some goodwill during this time.
Well, I have two suggestions for you. First one, as someone who orders a lot, I'm in a back house, okay? And I put in the instructions, back house, off of, and then the street name I live on, approximately 0% of the drivers actually look at that instruction. So I don't know how those show. I've always been curious how those instructions show up for the driver, because I have never once had someone come to the back house first. They always either drive up and down the street that my address is, but I don't live on, and then I notice them and I walk over there. Or they walk up to the front house and try to deliver to them. So I could never do the drop-off delivery because they would just pick a random house on the street.
Okay, well, so just to tell you, out of 34 deliveries I've done so far, I have 100% high rating based on 12 people. So I would say that's a pretty good percentage. And the reason I'm telling you that is to answer your question about the logistics of the app. What happens is an order pops up, you accept it, and then it gives you just GPS directions as far as where to go. Now, yeah,
so those delivery directions are just useless.
Well, yes and no. So you can click on the name of the restaurant, and then the window pops, it pulls up, and it gets rid of the GPS for a second. It tells you details about the restaurant, like the restaurant says, do these things when you get there. And then you can click on the person's name, and you can see their order. Now, you never have to click on any of that. You can just go to the restaurant, show up, say the person's name, they hand you the bag. And then you hit a check mark, and you slide something to say start delivery. And then it starts giving you GPS instructions on how to get to the address. Now, once again, William, you can click and the window will slide up and it'll give you the directions from the person and also ability to contact them and everything. So what I would venture is, knowing the way people are and knowing how lazy they are, they're not clicking up to read that directions. But what I do is I follow the GPS until I get like half a mile away. And then when I'm at a red light, I click on the thing to slide up to see if there are any instructions. So when I get to the complex, it'll tell me if there's a gate and what the code is, what house it is or anything. And then I know to do exactly what you're saying. And I would be able to get to your back house or anything. And at the very least, do they even text you or anything if they can't find it?
So I'd say about a third of the time so excluding the third of the time that just go to the front house and don't care. Eventually they call me the other two thirds of the time. So they don't look at the note, right? If they looked at the note, they would say they just must be hitting the button to call me.
And that was my first trip ever, right? I had to call because I went to the apartment they said it was, and I knocked on the door and the lady answered and she's like, I didn't order food. So then I called and the guy answered. He's like, that's weird. Let me call. And then a younger girl came out to accept the food for me. So I think a guy was sending food to his girlfriend and didn't tell his girlfriend to surprise her. And the mom turned the food away. So that was my first ever call. And then a call last night, in their notes, they were like, we're the second house on the right after the gate. So I pull in the gate. There's a driveway. And I pull into the second driveway. And then they pop out, turn their lights on, and they're in the third driveway. Don't say you're the second house on the right when it's the third driveway. And then look at me like I'm the idiot. That is unclear directions. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. But it is all in there, and you're able to, if you have any conscientiousness at all, be able to help people out. I mean, I had one order from Chick-fil-A where they told me they didn't have the cookies for the cookies and cream milkshake. So I called the girl, and I was like, do you want another type of milkshake? And she was like, give me chocolate. So I got her chocolate. So I'm sure 99% of drivers wouldn't do something like that. But I would want someone to do that for me, so I do that for them. And hell, she gave me a $10 tip for it, so.
Nice. Well, the other thing is, as a restaurant, I can tell you, we have some salty, salty Uber pickups. like, they will walk in, ignore all the customers ahead of them doing pickups, demand the sandwich, be disappointed that it's not done yet, and like you can see, like if there's a lot of online orders, you'll see the tickets like laid out, right? And it's like, dude, there's like 14 tickets ahead of you. You're not the only like pickup right now, right? Like we're in a global pandemic, and they'll get super salty with the staff, which is just spreading negativity, man. It's like, hey, take a look, like be observant. There are 14 tickets ahead of you. They're getting made as fast as they can. You know what I mean?
And isn't that the more important virus not to spread right now? The negativity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like seriously, everybody and their brother is ordering online, which is great, and I appreciate it. But sometimes, you know, the app, like you drove fast to get here, or you know, it literally is going to take 15 minutes. It never takes us 15 minutes, but sometimes it does literally take 15 minutes for an online order to get made.
Yeah, and I understand all that. When you first said super salty orders, I was like, why are people ordering a lot of salt on their orders? But no, I always try to be nice. When I go in, I always try to be polite, and I'm understanding about that because we're all in this together, quote unquote. And I don't mean that in some like hippie collectivist way. I mean that in, it's not my food. You don't have to like apologize to me. Just tell me what it's gonna do, and I'll communicate with the person. Like with the Hooters order, I kept texting the guy. I was like, I'm sorry, this is taking a while. I just asked for an update. This is what they said. It's outside of my control. And again, I'm doing this just as something to do. And it's nice to pick up the extra money, and it's going to help me afford my house when the housing market crashes, and I can have, hey, here's my down payment from all my Uber Eats money. But I don't have anything tied up in this where I'm going to get upset at it or anything. And I find that when I go in, I just ask politely, and they tell me what's going on, and I wait. Although I did have an experience like that the other day, William, where I went into a restaurant, and I went to they had a sign that said, pick up Uber Eats here. So I went there and I said, hey, I'm here for pickup. And she said, oh, I'm helping these two who did the walk-in order. And I was like, okay. And I stepped away from the counter because social distancing, right? And I'm standing there and I'm waiting and the couple's waiting. And then this other guy comes in and goes right to the counter and he goes, where's my Uber Eats order? And I just wanted to be like, damn, dude, you don't see like all of us waiting here and everything? And you're like that? Especially because she was in the middle of like packing a bag for someone else. So I understand that there are people like that, but I endeavor not to be like that. And I'm hoping that's what's making me be so successful, and it'll help me continue to be successful as I go forward. I mean, I don't know if it's typical to have 100% of a rating already, but... All right, so that sounds like that sums up that part of... Life on the Midside. Let's go to one more thing, which was a listener submitted question, which I think is very well taken, and I think it leads to a lot of interesting discussions about what's going on right now, and it sort of hits the intersection of our show because we're also talking about movies and art and entertainment as well. So Midsider Conrad, he started out with a list of movies: 1996, Independence Day; 1998, Armageddon; 2002, 28 Days Later; 2004, The Day After Tomorrow; 2005, War of the Worlds. Although I don't know how he's a Midside listener and he didn't say 2004, Dawn of the Dead remake. BVS, Avengers, superhero movies. And this is where he goes into responding to the show. And all the other movies that hinge on saving the world. Re your point about Boy Meets World focusing on day-to-day subject matter. How much do you think all of these end-of-the-world movies and TV shows have influenced the culture's acceptance of extreme measures and inability to speak out against such rights violations? I thought about this question a lot because I think it's an excellent, excellent question. And my initial thought is it does tremendously. And I thought about a story that broke this week. There was the story, did you guys see the story of the Malibu paddleboarder who was literally out in the water by himself, and they still chased him down with police boats, and then they arrested him when they got him on the beach? And I thought about how that should be a travesty, how people should be up in arms about it, but we're all just accepting of it. So before I go into...
Is the ocean not allowed? I don't understand. What's the restriction?
Yeah, he's violating the stay-at-home order.
Right, he's violating the stay-at-home order. So my question for you guys before I go into some long-winded, you know, response to this is, what do you think of Midsider Conrad's question? What do you think of how it relates to the whole Malibu paddle water thing and people not being outraged about it?
I'll set it up like this, but I won't give an answer, which is that it's a good question because it touches upon an old debate in art and philosophy, which is, how much does art shape the world and how much does the world shape art? And there's always a relationship, and maybe that relationship changes over time, but it's an interesting question about, in this instance, if the art primes us or if we primed the art. So, and I think it relates to the paddleboarder thing in the sense of how much do these incidents like this shape us and how much do we shape these incidents? Meaning, are these incidents making it, like, is the pandemic literally causing us to want more totalitarian states, or do more totalitarian states arise out of our wanting for them even prior to the pandemic? It's a little clunky, but we'll get there.
Yeah, I think you have an idea of where I'm going, which is why I think you're setting it up that way.
Yeah.
William, what would you respond with?
This is why I was watching movies like V for Vendetta lately and Firefly, rewatching episodes of Firefly and things like that, because I want to keep, you know, art is fuel. So I'm using that as spiritual fuel to make sure I keep that healthy outrage for these rights violations.
Right. And to build on what both of you are saying, especially Daniel, I think it's more a give and take relationship where it's reflective of what's going on, but it also builds upon it. And to start with how it builds upon it first, I think the answer to Midsider Conrad's question is, yes, I do think it primed us to accept things. I think we're watching these movies that are all... Every movie nowadays has to be world-ending. And that's actually something I've had a problem with for a while, even superhero movies. Every movie has to be the world at risk, or every season of The Flash has to be the world at risk. It can't even be Central City at risk anymore. It has to be the entire world is at risk. And I think that primes us to believe that every problem is a world-ending problem. And I think that explains a lot of why this specific pandemic is being treated as this could be the end of the world and this is the worst pandemic ever. Right? One of my questions has been, why are we treating this like it's going to kill 50% of the population, whereas at most it's going to kill 3%? And even those estimates are starting to be revealed as shockingly higher than the reality of the situation, which I believe we said in the beginning. And I think it is because of that. And I think it is also because we accept these things because who is the normal person in these movies? When you watch The Avengers, when you watch any Marvel movie, when you watch all of these movies that he listed, who are the normal people? They're bystanders. They're passive. They're accepting what these elites, perhaps might you say, Daniel, the people who can see the real world in Plato's allegory of the cave, they're watching these philosopher kings go out and fix the world where they're all at the mercy of it. Is not Avengers, when you're talking about Endgame and Infinity War, isn't that the battle between philosopher kings? Isn't Thanos the perfect example of a philosopher king? And then the responses he's getting back from Captain America and Iron Man, aren't they philosopher kings? Because they're sitting there arguing about what the rest of the world should do?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an excellent point. And I think when people are viewing that art, whether you view yourself as being part of the superhero class or part of the bystander class might be an interesting psychological endeavor.
Yeah, reflect for yourself, right? What do you see yourself as? And I actually think, and I wasn't intending on this pre-show, but hell, we're fucking here and it's not a surprise. I think this explains part of the reaction to Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, Batman versus Superman especially, because that movie dares to say that we see Superman as a philosopher king, but what really is he? Part of the bystander class, or in that movie, the class of every individual.
And it's daring to posit that question. And I think people reject that on a subconscious level, because this goes into your other part of the question, Daniel. And it's something that I've really learned recently and really reflected on. I think we are so used to giving over to authority and looking to have our problems solved for us that we expect it. And I think we've been primed to be that way. Now, this is where the art thing comes back, right? Because I think, to Midsider Conrad's point, it's not just these apocalyptic films. It's naturalism in general. Because what are we taught and what do we believe? We are taught and we believe, and naturalism reflects this, that everything we do successfully in life and everything that holds us back is not a result of our choices. It's a result of the systemic structural issues in society and the world. Well, isn't this pandemic the perfect example of that? Well, this is beyond our control. There's no way we can control it, but we're flailing against the wind trying to control it. It was outside of the normal person's control, right? These are geopolitical issues, global issues. But here's the thing, Daniel, that I think really, William, and I really want to see what you think about this as well, as someone who works in internet and technology. I think that a lot of this has to do with the fact that our individual private spaces no longer exist unless we intentionally make sure they exist. Or another way of saying it is, it was a lot easier to unintentionally have private individual spaces in the past. Because nowadays, we're hyper-connected and we are receiving messaging 24/7. What I mean is, it used to be back in the day when you went out in public and went to work, that was where you had the most external influences on your life. Then when you went home and you were in your house, and most specifically your bedroom, was your private place to reflect on things and to be on your own individually without any sort of messaging. And when I say messaging, I want to be clear. You could have a television in your room, you could have a radio, you could have books, but those are one way. You're receiving information. With the age of social media, in the age of all this technology, everything is a conversation. You can never say anything without having any sort of pushback. Even if you're saying it internally, you put on your computer, you put on your social media, you look for things, and you're getting the response to what you would say immediately. So there's always pushback. There's always the idea of sort of the illusion of subjectivism or relativism, where it's like, oh, well, somebody else believes that, so my view is no more valid than theirs are. You don't have a chance
also,
to...
It's also the pushback you get for having different views. I mean,
right.
This weekend, Dr. Drew is getting pummeled on Twitter and getting death threats and stuff. And his tune hasn't changed since the beginning of this pandemic, but all of a sudden now... It's like, I don't know, it just, oh, we should be reasonable, that we shouldn't do all these rights violating things, that if that's not actually going to help the outcome. Oh, well, now it's bad right now, so clearly he must have been wrong. He was he's getting all these just the flu bro memes thrown at him. And, you know, it's like, what switches flipped here? Oh, you've said something that's not popular, so it's time to dogpile.
And that's actually a great example, because that's something Adam Carolla talks about with Dr. Drew all the time. And Adam Carolla says it's his chick wiring, because Dr. Drew reads his mentions and he takes that to heart, and it affects him psychologically, where Adam doesn't care. Where I think Adam's a special case, where he is very, how would you say it, Daniel? He's very Teflon. To these, this is what I mean by dementia. I can't think of the fucking word.
Adam himself would describe it as that he has no self-esteem, so he doesn't particularly care. But that's not okay, how I would.
Right. I don't think that's what he means too. But yeah, exactly. So do you want to expound upon that, or do you have something you wanted to add? You sound like you were about to speak.
No, I never want to speak. I'm just here. I'm here so I don't get fined.
Good callback.
No, continue on. I'm interested in your point. We talked a little about this on the phone, so I'm sort of digesting it all as you're restating it here.
Yeah.
Did you finish it up?
No. Let me put a bow on this.
Yeah.
So it used to be
that when you went home, that's where you reflected on everything that happened in the outside influence of everyone in the world, and that's where you came to who you were as an individual and what your principles and beliefs were about things. But now, we literally invite that into our bedroom, where we have our phones, and that, as William was saying, the pushback is literally when you're, I'm as guilty of it as anyone, you're on your phone, and you're getting that pushback on your phone because you're reading it. So now, when you go out in the world and you're working and you're not able to be on social media as much, is when you're least influenced, as opposed to the past, where you were most influenced out there. Now, ironically, they've locked us in our houses when that's all we have to deal with all day. Although, the interesting stat about that is, I guess content creators are seeing less usage of their platforms and channels now, so I don't know what that says about the actual work being done in this country, or if everyone's just on YouTube all day at work. But that's a different discussion.
I think it's more so that, just to put a point on that, I think it's more so that people are using a bunch of additional platforms. Things are getting attention that wouldn't normally get attention, is what
which
I
is taking
know,
away.
Say.
Okay, which yeah. is taking away, because when you have less time, you just go to the places you really like because you know you're going to enjoy them.
Yeah, I right. think also people are more spending more time like on Discord and Zoom and FaceTime and Skype with actual people they would normally interact with in real life. So that's also stealing attention from the attention-stealing things.
Yeah. But anyway, to put a point on my point that I'm trying to make here is, this is the other side of the thing, right? Where we are influenced by those movies and those cultural conversations, but they're also reflective of what we're going through, which is we're constantly being told all the time, or we're constantly engaging in this conversation that's making us feel small and unimportant and global. And this goes back to what I've said before, that the way we need to fix this is we need to make things more community oriented. You need to be worrying about your little community that you're in, because that's important, because that's what you live in, and that's what's real. And I think this is another example of that, where you need to have strict rules where you figure out where your time is invested in those conversations and where it's not. And I think right now we're living in the consequences of not having that line, where we're just all engaged in that conversation. It's all fed into us all the time, and it's all the pushback, and we don't get to make the decisions on our own anymore.
I think that's right. I think that's a very astute observation. I think that was going. So part of my thing about this whole art conversation, or it's just sort of a general conversation, is I think that trend was going on pre-social media, meaning something Ayn Rand identified is that we're thinking less for ourselves and thinking more, hey, what do my friends and peers think about this? Or what do other people think about this? And then that's how I'll determine what I think about it. But I think that the deadly poison of social media is that what it was an accelerator like we couldn't have possibly imagined to that kind of mentality, that second-handed mentality. And it set it ablaze and created a wildfire of second-handedness, and not just accelerated its extent, but accelerated it in every element of our life, because there's no getting away from it anymore. You have a little device in your pocket that connects you with everyone else's opinions every moment you're awake, essentially. And by the way, if you're not looking at it, it will ding to tell you to look at it. It will have little red circles with a one in it that say, hey, look at me. Now, I am not one of the people who thinks that the solution to that is we got to regulate it to death. I'm one of the people who thinks the solution to that is turn your phone off. And to use a phrase from earlier, go outside, even though that's highly overrated.
Well, Daniel, to what you're saying is there's even an argument here, and this is why I brought up TV and books and radio. There's an argument that, and I'm using the metaphor of the bedroom on purpose because I think that was the most private, sacred space, right? I mean, they say it's the man's is the man's throne room, right? The bathroom, but you know, it's the bedroom. They joke about that because it is the bedroom until you get married and then you have somebody else in there. But theoretically, that person should be the one person whose influence you want all the time, right? Because that's your number one teammate. But the point I'm making with
except
the TV
for when
and radio
you're doing number two,
right?
the TV, the radio, and the books, is even that's an outside influence. But I think it's different because, as you're saying, you're not getting the pushback that William's talking about, and I think the pushback is the accelerant. But there is a legitimate conversation for every individual to have with him or herself or with their family, their spouses, about how much influence do you want in the bedroom? Do you want books in there? Do you want TV? Do you want radio? I know I didn't have a TV in my bedroom growing up as a kid, and I'm sure that contributed. Now, I did have books. I'm sure not having a TV contributed to me being the independent thinker I am, but how much did books harm or help that? I don't know. I think we would have to start having a discussion of the nature of these mediums. But that's also interesting, as well as television has evolved, and there's so many more options to watch, and our art on TV and our news on TV has become much more about people sharing their opinions than being objective as well. So there's a balance there as well.
I mean, look, we don't have a TV in our bedroom. We don't have a TV in our dining room. We have spaces where we try not to have electronics. We're imperfect and we fail at that from time to time. But the standing order is essentially these are areas that are about things other than electronics and what's out in the world or being entertained or having our eyes flickered by moving pixels. But rooms like the living room are for that, or the media room, or whatever you want to call it. And there's times for it, and that's fine, but it shouldn't be a constant. And maybe this is because I do digital for a living, and so by the time I get home, the last thing I want to do is look to Twitter or Facebook or any social media site. It makes me feel like that. So it's heightened for me a bit, but it's a genuinely good practice, I think, overall, to have isolation zones away from this external influence.
Right, because let's ground it in what's currently going on. Would this pandemic seem as bad if there was no social media involved? And what I mean by that is, let me speak personally here, William, because you haven't spoken at all, so I'll give you a lead-in to transition into whatever you want to say, is besides the fact that there are school closures and I have digital learning and, you know, the stuff around me isn't closed, I mean, the stuff around me is closed, I would not be personally affected by this. And what I mean by that is I don't know anyone who has it personally.
Yeah, I think people because of social media are being manipulated. Their emotions are being manipulated, and you know, it ties back to what you were talking about with art affecting people's susceptibility to being for having their rights violated. I think, Justin, the proof of what you're saying is actually the opposite. So I've been trying to consciously reach out, talk to people, be involved in things that give me that more positive view of the future, right? And so this is a tool to be used and not just a blanket negative effect, right? I stay off of Twitter. I don't. There's a bunch of group chats and people are very pessimistic. I try not to spend too much time on there other than catching up with people, right? I'm turning my attention to more positive things, you know? And I'm doing that with the people I interact with too. You know, we're supposed to be looking for our second location for my store. And I've been, every time I talk to my business partner, I make sure we talk about that still, because you know what? It's still going to happen. And keeping that positive outlook, I think, is another benefit of those social interactions that you can mine from the turd that is social media.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here as someone who's straight edge. It's the age old question of freedom, which is, just because I can, should I? Right? I'm a libertarian. I believe that all drugs should be legal. People
should be able to do drugs, or in another way is they should have the ability to do drugs if they want to. Should they do drugs? No. So with social media, can you engage with this global perspective, this way of getting everyone's perspective? Yes. Should you? That's a contextual question and contextual answer. What do you think, Daniel?
I think that's right. There are, I'll qualify by saying there are limited scenarios in which you maybe should think about this from a global perspective, especially insofar as there's politics to the economic destruction that's going on right now, and you need to think about who you should vote for, if that's something you still do, or who you should support politically in other means, by other means, through money or through advocacy, etc.
Burn them all down. Put on your Rorschach masks. They want us to wear masks. This is the reverse Keen Act. Who watches the Watchmen? We do.
Or that. But you need to very purposefully do that, and you need to monitor how long you do it and really set strict limits for what you want to get out of that, and then do everything you can to be more local, to use a phrase.
Right, 100%. And to sort of wrap this up and put an end on this, this is something that certainly has been going on for a long time. It certainly didn't start with social media. I mean, when we look at the 90s, we had things like the OJ trial or the Clinton trial. If you remember both of those, I remember a story of a professor at Clemson who supposedly had to reassess himself because he got so obsessed with the Clinton hearings, the Clinton trial, that he couldn't turn away from it, and it really affected him personally. So it's been going on a while. You know, there's a development of the 24-hour news cycle, and there's a lot of people know this pushes your buttons. You know, Scott Adams wrote about how the media knows negative news sells, so it helps them get better ratings. So it hasn't been going on a while. But the big thing is, it's not about regulation. It's about we need to look at ourselves now, and we need to introspect and say, what do we want our lives to look at? What information do we want to be feeding ourselves? Because just like the food you receive, the food you eat affects your body, the information you receive, and when I say information, I mean that's anything that goes into your head, right? Any of the five senses being stimulated concretely, and any of the ideas, no matter how you're receiving them, be they art, news, education, who you're having conversations with, affects the way our brains are formed and the way our brains perform. And right now we've gotten ourselves to a place where we've created this sick cycle of creating art, entertainment, and news that reflects the idea that the world is outside of our control and controls our lives. And then we receive that messaging back, which only further reinforces it, and we see the result of it now. The result of it is we're willing to sit here and accept and wait for other people, wait for these philosopher kings to tell us what to do, to how to save our lives. And even more further than that, we will shame other people who don't accept that premise because they haven't perhaps been fed the same information and participated in the same exact cycle. And it's so bad that we have two sides who are arguing with each other about how evil and stupid the other side is because perhaps they've received different information and are in a different cycle. And I think that's what we need to address going forward. I think that's the takeaway here. It's not what we're going to do with the rest of the world, is what we're going to do with ourselves individually to move forward. All right, guys, let's put a bow on this episode. Let's let the fat lady sing. What did we learn this trip, William?
I learned I can blame Gene Roddenberry more for my obsession with space and technology.
Daniel?
I learned that apparently Independence Day is culturally relevant. I was unaware of such things. Justin, what did you learn?
That Independence Day wasn't culturally relevant? I don't understand your comment.
It primed us for pandemics, Justin.
Oh, the movie! I thought you meant...
No, Justin. I'm always talking about what we're talking about.
I thought you were referring to the 4th of July. I was like, well, that's the irony. Look, this is what I learned. This is what I learned, okay? There's an irony here of the movie Independence Day. It was supposed to be a reinforcement of the original Independence Day in America. But it actually has contributed to this cultural conversation that's going against the original Independence Day. Now, to be clear, I'm not saying these people who made these movies aren't well-intentioned, but I'm saying they share the ideas and they share the principles and they share this cycle that they're contributing to without realizing it. And that's the main thing. If there's anything I know and there's anything I've learned even more, you have to be in control of your life and be as conscious as you can about what you're doing and what you're taking in, because the second you stop being conscious about it, it all becomes unintentional and you've lost a little bit of control of your life. How's that, Daniel?
Heavy. Whew. Oh boy. We hope you learned something this week. And if you did, don't go on social media. Forget that. Go tell another human being what you learned this week, be it in person or if you want to social distance and not yell six feet away what you learned on the midside, then you can Zoom them or FaceTime them or something like that. But don't go on social media this week. Forget that social media exists for a little while and talk to some real human beings. If you want to talk to them about something, you can go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to past episodes. You can also order merch there, although I wouldn't recommend it right now. You can get your Midside t-shirt, classic logo tee, as well as, what else do we have up there, Justin? The Hail Snydra shirt, and?
We have False Dichotomy, bro. We have a couple of those. One that shows fascism and, I don't know how you would say it, like, they're both fascism. But one that shows Nazism and communism, right? It has the hammer and sickle, and then it has a swastika. It's saying False Dichotomy, bro. And then we also have the False Dichotomy, bro gym shirt.
For all of your false dichotomies at the gym.
If you have any ideas for newer t-shirts, let us know, because we need some new t-shirt ideas.
It's true. That'd be something corona-related, although we'll see. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Google Play. Thanks to Liberty.me for continuing to syndicate us. Appreciate that. Tell a friend, patreon.com/themidside. A couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content. Keeps the lights on. And until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a stay.
All right, guys, I have to ask a question because it's something I realized this past week. I realized that we are no longer the prime timeline. Kobe Bryant died, Tom Brady's no longer going to play for the Patriots, and this whole craziness is happening. So my question is, did we just diverge from the prime timeline to become an alternate timeline? Or was it somewhere earlier, like the Snyder Cut not being released or Trump getting elected, that made us diverge?
You're now into the Large Hadron Collider theory. Oh. That when we turn the Large Hadron Collider on, we entered a parallel universe?
You're asking close to the right question. What I want to know is, when do we get out of the Kelvin timeline? Because I just don't want to be in the Kelvin timeline.